Business Class is brought to you by the Tourism Academy, harnessing the power of science, business psychology, and adult education to advance the tourism industry and build sustainable economies. Learn how to engage your community, win over stakeholders, and get more visitors at tourismacademy.org.
Steve Ekstrom, Tourism Academy, tourismacademy.org, CEO and co-founder here, and also the host of the Business Class podcast. This season, we are taking a look at people who have made unique and interesting careers in travel and tourism and destinations, and also taking a little bit of a peek at what it takes to be an innovative leader in many ways. And today's guest, Steve Paganelli, Head of Americas and Partnerships TripAdvisor, is one of those people that I have seen on the periphery for quite some time, and I'm excited to have you finally on the show. So welcome.
Thank you so much. It's really a pleasure to be with you.
What did you want to be when you grew up?
Oh gosh, you know, it's funny. Like, I think typical kid, I wanted to be a doctor, lawyer. I don't know if that's a typical kid of the 2020s, but in the 1980s, it was, you know, it was that. Based on nothing at all, I had no exposure to either other than my own, you know, primary care physician as a kid, I guess. But and even when I headed off to college, it was the notion of actually studying like international business or foreign relations, which although that was like a declared major, I never actually took any courses in either of those things. But as I think about it, I feel like travel and tourism is a little bit of both of those things, right? It's a little bit of international business. It's a little bit of foreign relations. But most of all, it's kind of just working with people in general. It's relations in general, actually.
How did you get your start in the industry and make your way to the spot where you're at now?
Yeah, so got my start by accident. I literally wanted to live on campus summer of my freshman year of college, and they turned the college into a conference center over the summers. And if you worked there, you got free housing. So that's how I ended up in the industry. Ended up doing some meeting planning through that job, and started out as a meeting planner, then joined a startup destination, a DMO in Connecticut. And really from that point, I had the bug for destination marketing, destination management. I did that for about 13 years, actually sort of leading DMOs or working in different roles within DMOs. And then when I did leave to make a shift to the private sector, it was actually to launch a destination division for a digital ad agency. And then that ultimately took me to TripAdvisor.
What do you love most about what you do?
You know, a couple of things, honestly. You know, if I'm thinking sort of high level, it's being connected to an industry that that the work that DMOs do is impactful to communities. It's impactful to preserving the essence of those communities, the quality of life. It is impactful to the workforce within those communities. If I drill down, it is the quality of the people I get to work with. I've been very fortunate to work with passionate, talented people. Both folks who've been on my teams, but also folks that I've worked for. And then the customers that I work with, the partners that I work with, some of whom have been friends for 30 years now, and who are equally passionate, and all with that singular focus on strengthening communities, creating, you know, great experiences for travelers. I consider myself so lucky to work in this space. And I feel like I say it at least once a week to someone. I can't imagine, and no offense to people in those other industries, but I can't imagine selling widgets or being in some other, and I won't say others because I will offend someone, but I can't imagine doing anything else. I mean, I think any of us who work in travel and tourism are very, very blessed.
What is your earliest travel memory?
So we used to stay, first of all, we didn't travel a lot when I was a kid. We would drive to Florida before we ultimately moved to Florida. And then my dad opened a small business, so our travels were very limited. But I don't know if it's my first travel experience, but I used to love when we would stay at these sort of roadside hotels. And I just loved the hotel room. I loved that there was a lamp attached to the wall on each side of your bed. I all of like these little things that mean nothing to me today as a traveler, but just that experience of being in a world that was very different from my day-to-day existence. And so I, you know, that's probably 4 or 5 years old, but staying in a hotel and the excitement of fresh towels and fresh sheets. And again, those little kind of creature comforts that hotels have that are different from sort of your personal home experience.
How much do you travel now?
I average about 220 nights a year on the road. Some of that's pleasure travel. A lot of it's actually pleasure travel. I don't just work in travel. I like to actually be a traveler. But yeah, I travel a lot.
What do you wish was different about the travel experience today?
I wish that it was more frictionless, I guess is the term we use most in the industry these days. There are a lot of headaches that accompany travel. Whether it's, we're all familiar. I'm sure all your listeners are familiar with them from getting through the airport, getting onto your flight, the risk of flight cancellations, arriving at a hotel that's oversold and walks you, which thankfully has only happened to me like once maybe, but those kinds of things. Excuse me?
We can call ahead.
Yeah, exactly.
We know some people.
So those are the things that trouble me. I think what excites me though about those frustrations, a couple of things actually. You know, on TripAdvisor, you know, we're a user-generated site, people submit reviews. And when I first joined, I kind of expected that our reviews would trend more negative because I think as consumers, we think about all of the negative things. But the entire time that I've worked at TripAdvisor, our review scores have averaged anywhere from like a 4.13 to like today a 4.32 out of 5, which is amazingly overwhelming when you think about all the headaches that travel carries. And then I had an experience recently that I think reminded me what travel can be. I had a flight cancel a day before I was going to be traveling, and the airline rebooked me on a new flight. Relatively tight connection, but they rebooked me on a new flight same day. I was actually going to arrive 15 minutes earlier, but I was panicked about my bags making it. And so the first, you know, sort of aha moment was getting the confirmation email that my bag made it onto the plane, landing in my connecting city, which was Charlotte in this instance, being able to track my bag where it was, knowing that it made it onto the plane for my final destination, landing in San Diego and opening my TripIt app to see what the restaurants were there, because I was going to be immediately moving to a meeting and wanted to grab a coffee, found a Starbucks, ordered a Starbucks from my plane while we were taxiing to the gate. Got off my plane, got to Starbucks. My coffee was waiting there for me. I picked up my coffee. I walked to baggage claim. My luggage was coming around the carousel. I grabbed my luggage. I ordered my Uber while walking out the door of the airport. As I got to the pickup spot for Uber, my Uber pulled up. I jumped in and got on my way. That doesn't happen very often, but it really underscored what the potential is for us as we sort of continue to advance as an industry. And that's super exciting, I think.
How is the place where you live now like where you grew up?
Oh, it's very different. I moved to Pittsburgh about 5 years ago. I was born in New York and lived there till 7 and then moved to Florida where I lived for 10 years. I've pretty much always hugged the Eastern Seaboard. So Pittsburgh is the furthest inland that I've lived. I don't have a beach, a sandy ocean beach near me, which is the first time that I've not been within pretty close proximity, you know, maybe tops 45 minutes away from a sandy beach. So it's very different. It's very different. A really fabulous city, but different from where I grew up.
How is it most similar?
I think the people. So, you know, this is the first time I've really lived full time in, you know, what's effectively a Midwestern city. And I happened to grow up on the west coast of Florida, which is at the time was dominated by folks from Indiana and Illinois. That part of the country migrated to the West Coast, New Jersey, New York migrated to the East Coast. But in both cases, in Pittsburgh and where I grew up in Clearwater, the people are just genuinely warm. I can remember driving down to Florida with friends for spring break. I went to college in New York And they would comment how the people got progressively nicer the further south you got, and things got slower, progressively slower the further south you got. And I didn't notice that until I saw it through their eyes. But yeah, the people in Pittsburgh are amazing. And when I was moving here, even if I met people who were at some point in their life from Pittsburgh, they would all react the same way. Oh my God, I loved it in Pittsburgh. Or, oh my gosh, I can't wait to, move back to Pittsburgh. So it instills really warm thoughts. And I think the people are warm here within the city.
Who do you look up to in the industry?
I look up to folks like Maura Gass, who's with Irving, Texas, and who's someone I've known a long time, and who just has an amazing way of thinking about the business that we're in, thinking about the partners she works with. I look up to Tammy Blunt, who I've also known for a long time, who's currently with Seattle. And, they're folks who've sort of grown up in the industry, but they are today, I think, the kinds of folks that are leading our thinking within the industry. Or guys like Al Hutchinson in Baltimore, who's just so passionate, not even just about the work that he does, but the people that he interacts with, the city he calls home, and is so tuned into not just the obvious things that tourism does for his community, but the less obvious things, and how he's working to develop our youth and the next set of people that will grow up in this industry. Frankly, there's no shortage of people that I look up to in this industry. It's kind of my motivation that I can someday kind of live up to the example that they sort of set.
It's funny you mentioned a couple of people. Maura and I were having a moment a couple of weeks ago, and we realized we've known each other for 25 years. and on my screen is a draft of an email response to Al.
That's great. It's kind of a blessing, a curse, when you realize you've known someone for 25 years in the industry.
She knew me when I had hair, and maybe even
that's
highlights.
Right. That's right. She also knew me when I had hair as well. So I know that folks listening can't see either of us, but she
we're follically challenged.
That's right. Oh my God, I use that term all the time.
It's a good one. What advice do you have for people who are getting started, whether that be in technology, in destinations, or like where you're at now, which is kind of a blend of both?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, and I have this conversation actually with my son all the time, follow your passion. Whether it's technology, whether it's travel and tourism, do things that you love. And it's kind of probably hackneyed expression, but when you find the things that you love, that you're passionate about, you never work a day in your life. Make connections, be open to the people you meet. Maintain those connections, not out of a sense of, oh, what might I be able to get from them someday down the road, but because you never know where you're going to learn from next. And you don't know where your paths may cross, where you can be of help to them, or you can learn from them, or you'll have an opportunity to work with them. So I guess those would be, follow your passions, maintain relationships, build strong relationships, pay attention to them, don't ignore them or take them for granted.
What is something that you learned today?
Learned today talking with you?
If you learned from me, that's fantastic, and I'm really flattered. Just in general, what is something that you learned today?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I'm trying to think about my day. It's been, like most of them, a very, very varied day. Probably, it's not necessarily that I learned it today, but I think I was reminded of it a little bit about having patience and having grace. Sometimes there are folks who make decisions that can seem short-sighted, ill-advised, but there's a whole set of circumstances that they might be going through that you have no view into. And so first taking the step back to recognize that, and then leaning in to figure out, you know, why that might be the way it is, and how you can move forward where in a way that is productive for both of you. That's a pretty specific example, but and it's also at the same time kind of a nebulous example. But I do think it's reflective of the way the world works sometimes. And it, you know, it's easy to get frustrated by those things. And this was something like very legal oriented. It was related to a very specific partner, but it's emblematic of a kind of situation that I run into. And often lose sight of the reality of it as well. So
what is the kindest thing a stranger has done for you?
I was once going through the Throgs Neck, or over the Throgs Neck Bridge in New York. This is my first job out of college. I was commuting from Long Island to Connecticut, and found myself in one of those lanes, you know, that only take, at the time, only took a token, which I did not have. And someone in a car next to me in New York, which often gets a bad rap of people not being friendly or whatever. I don't actually recall where their license plate was from, but rolled down their window, tossed me a token so I could, you know, get through this. I don't know if it's the nicest thing that anyone's ever done for me, but it's certainly something that jumps out in my memory as unexpected, small, in the grand scheme of things, such a small thing, but, you know, made such a big difference to me in that moment. You know, again, there's tons of others. I mean, from, you know, there's advice that I got from my first manager, but my first real manager in college that to this day I still hear in my head and hopefully model with others. But, you know, there's a lot of things, but that's one little story that sort of stood out for me.
And what was that piece of advice that you got from that manager?
Well, there were a couple, actually. One of them was to always make your boss look good. And by the way, this was not my direct manager. He was above my manager. He said, you know, your job is to make your boss look good. And if you do that well, your boss will always be looking out for you. They will always take care of you. The other thing that he said to me, and I don't think I get through a year, maybe not even a month, that I don't repeat it, but is always hire people smarter than you. And you know, I joke that in my case, that's a very easy, a very easy thing to achieve. But in all seriousness, I mean, I think sometimes managers, in particular, I think sometimes can be afraid of people who are smarter than them, and you can define that however you want, but who have a different outlook, a different perspective, different experience, and they can be very intimidated by that. And I think his point was surround yourself with people who are different, who are smarter, and again, you will be the better for that. Your organization will be the better for that.
I have, if you'll indulge me, I have a funny story from when I lived in New York.
Oh, yeah.
And I was coming off the subway, and there were these two elderly women who were clearly tourists on the 42nd Street train station trying to swipe a Metro card and get on the train. And I could see them, you know, from the 100 feet that I had to walk to get to the turnstile. So finally, I get to the turnstile. They're still struggling to swipe their card. And I finally just looked at them. I said, hold your card like you're punching somebody. And of course, the next moment, the woman swipes her card and she goes right through. And I kept walking and I could hear the laughter from them, you know, behind me. And my family jokes that somewhere in Ireland are two old ladies telling that story over a pint.
I love that.
Yeah.
They knew exactly what to do, though. I think that's really the best part of the story, was that they didn't have to think about how they would punch somebody.
No, they looked rather intimidating.
That's great.
But, you know, and to what you say about, you know, hiring people who are smarter than you, you know, I like to say that I am a nerd whisperer. You know, I am surrounded by people who have lots and lots of letters after their names. And I am the college dropout who has to interpret everything that they say. So yeah, I totally understand. I totally agree with you on that one.
I think that's amazing. My brother did not go to college, and I believe, and I let him know all the time that he's way smarter than me. I mean, we may have learned differently, but he's way smarter than me in a whole host of different ways. So I'm with you. A college degree is not the only the only sign of someone's intelligence or wisdom, for that matter. So,
well, you know, and my dad used to say that you'll pay for your education one way or another. And sometimes the result of that is a piece of paper. Sometimes it's a lesson learned. Sometimes it's a shop teacher with 4.5 fingers. You're going to pay for your education one way or another. And yeah, as long as you learn from these experiences, it's not lost.
Yeah, I love that. I just love that. That's going to stay with me now for a long time. I heard something somewhat similar the other day. Someone, unfortunately, I can't attribute this quotation because I don't recall who it was from, but they said, I never lose. I either win or I learn. And I think it's in some ways, it's another way of saying what your dad said.
Yeah. I mean, if you learn, it's not lost.
That's right.
You know, it's not a losing situation. What's the biggest challenge that you're facing these days?
I think, you know, again, I work for a company that's 23 years old. I think there is good and bad that comes with that. I think we're very well known, and we're lucky to have partnerships that, you know, that go back many years. But hopefully, like any successful organization, we're also continually evolving. But people's impression or understanding of who you are, it doesn't always evolve as quickly. And so I think we're in an interesting time in my day-to-day. I'm in an interesting time in that I feel like I'm working every day to sort of educate people on what TripAdvisor is today versus what we might have been when they first started working at this 10 years ago, 12 years ago. And trying to bring them along the ride for where we're headed. I think the good news is about that is it's allowing us at the same time to tap into what are some of the biggest challenges for our consumers, our travelers, as well as some of the biggest challenges for the destinations we work with. How we're thinking about things like ED&I, whether it's within our own, the workforce within our communities, or the way that we're serving underserved traveler groups who've often been overlooked. It's thinking about sustainability and how do we make sure we're leading our destinations in a way that both preserves what makes them an attractive destination in the first place without pursuing initiatives that have the potential to create different classes of travelers. I hear the term, you know, we're pursuing the most valuable travelers for our destination. And that can be interpreted different ways and it can be implemented in different ways. And, it's one of the things that we're thinking about and working on. And it's one of the things that we're doing in concert with the partners we work with. But it's also one of the things that I think about just as being, a global citizen. And how do we ensure that the very strengths of travel and tourism don't become closed off to certain portions of our population because they get shut out of them because of cost or because of restrictions that hamper some travelers more than others.
Is there anything I didn't ask that you wish I did?
Well, I kind of feel, Stephen, that we could have had a very long-ranging conversation about a whole host of things. So I'm sure there are.
Well, let's talk shit about people. Let's do that.
Well, that same boss who I used to work for, who I mentioned, this small Irish guy who was in the army for his professional career, he used to always invite me into his office at the end of the day, and his thing was, let's smoke, joke, and tell lies about people we don't like.
I like that one.
Exactly. I think this has been a great conversation. It's been, I didn't fully know what to expect and I've enjoyed it immensely. It's covered a whole bunch of different topics.
Is there anything you'd like to ask me?
I mean, there's a ton if you have the time. Like, how did you make it from New York down to, I think you're based in South Florida now. Like, how did that all happen?
Well, So I started my career probably around the same time you did in the 90s, working on site with different museums, attraction suppliers of all sorts, restaurants, theater, helping to identify new product and bring it to market, whether that be, you know, taking a rainforest cafe and creating educational programs so you could get thousands of school kids through the restaurant before it even opened for lunch, or
very cool.
Yeah, or, you know, working with an Applebee's to figure out how they could do millions of dollars in to-go lunches. So I did that for a while. Then I went into the consulting world, and I worked with destinations. You know, a lot of what I did would be to fly in and point out the obvious that the locals drive past every day and explain why those would be relevant and valuable to travelers, and then help them bring it to market and help them publicize it just using some connections that I had. So my clients had all been DMOs leading up to COVID. In 2015, I was in California to teach a program. Sheena Works, who's a organizational psychologist, instructional designer, educator by trade, asked if she could come along, and she said it would make a great online program after we left. And I thought she was crazy. But respecting her and her opinion, I started learning, you know, and I learned a lot about how people learn, how people interact online, what it takes to deliver valuable online training, in those few years with some back burner beta testing products and packages and technologies. And then when COVID hit, I'm like, you know what? This is a lot more fun. Let me just do this. I actually sold my house in South Florida almost 2 years ago. And I bought an RV. Oh, and wow. The dog and I have been digital nomads for almost 2 years.
You know, I heard this on one of your prior episodes that you did recently at, I can't remember who with, but from the Gulf Shores. That's amazing. So how much your time do you spend on the road? Which is your question, I think, our conversation today.
Yeah, well, you know, when I was traveling for work, I would do 130 nights a year, which for me was a lot. And mm-hmm. every one of those nights, I just wanted to be home.
Yeah.
I just wanted to be in my own bed. The irony that I now spend 360 nights a year on the road, but I take my bed with me.
Right, exactly. So you're still getting the best of both worlds, really, right?
Yeah. And, you know,
you're getting the best of both worlds.
Exactly. We were at Destinations International. I had to pack a bag to walk from the valet into the hotel. Like, it was really, and look at my own bed from my hotel room window.
Probably longingly, I bet.
Absolutely. Because it takes a couple days to get comfortable. You know, I mean, unless you're absolutely exhausted, and, you know, that's fine. So
definitely. Yeah, that's terrific.
Yeah. So that's where I've ended up. And like you said, you know, surrounding myself with people who are smart and smarter than I am. Now, if you take a look at the advisory panel that we have collected here at the Tourism Academy, Al Hutchinson, Adam Burke, Elliot Ferguson, Fred Dixon, Barbara Karasek, you know, I mean, just some really smart people. And then really the people. Educational
Love all
people.
All of those names you've mentioned, actually.
Yeah, they're all great people, and they've become friends. And, you know, that's one thing that you mentioned, too, in your talk is, you know, making friends in the industry. And being a digital nomad has given me a much better opportunity to spend quality time with the people that I've met and come to appreciate and come to value. It's also given me a better opportunity to experience destinations beyond the fly in and fly out.
And the amazing sort of country we live in, and maybe some other countries, because you can certainly get to others in your RV.
Yeah. I mean, I went crawfish harvesting with an old Cajun man in Louisiana, and I went and hatched turtles by the beach in Mexico, and took Zoom meetings with beluga whales in the background in Canada. Like, you know, who does that?
Yeah, right.
I do. I'm that crazy.
Back to what I was saying earlier about being blessed to work in the space that we work in, which is amazing.
If folks want to get in touch with you or learn more about the work that you're doing with TripAdvisor, how would they do it?
Well, they can certainly email me, which is, you know, first initial last name at tripadvisor.com. They can also visit us at tripadvisor.com/advertising.
Fantastic. I appreciate you. Thank you for joining me here on the podcast, and I hope you have a great weekend.
Well, thank you. You too. I've enjoyed it, and I hope it won't be our last conversation. I look forward to others.
Fantastic. I appreciate that.